in your head with it, though.
Okay, how's that? Now, better?
Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Bernadette, and I am a compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. It's good to be here. It's good to see so many people that I know and love, and that some people I haven't seen in a while. Some people are new. How about that? I came into Overeaters Anonymous to the 6 Mile Run meeting on a Sunday night at 6 o'clock, and I came in, and there was this great big circle, probably as many people here today as were there, in this great big circle of people talking. And everybody was sharing different things about they couldn't eat sugar, and they were just sharing these things. And I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I came into OA through the back door, you know. And I left that meeting thinking, wow, I feel sorry for all those people. I really felt terrible. But, you know, the whole lot of them, they couldn't eat sugar, they couldn't eat this, they couldn't eat that. And I thought, wow, that's really difficult. I can't imagine. In the meantime, you know, I'm as big as life, and I'm trying to get back in my car. And I'm thinking, I feel so bad for those people. And then what I came to learn, of course, over time, is that those people are my people. You people are my people. And I love that. I love that. Because there's a place for us. There's a place. You know, I didn't get abstinent right away. Obviously, I felt sorry for giving up sugar, so I wasn't ready to do that by any means. But I couldn't be abstinent. I was trying and trying to get abstinent. I had a sponsor, and I probably anybody who's here more than, like, you know, 25 years has either been my sponsor or was friends with somebody who was my sponsor. And at some point or other, I asked everybody, can you be my sponsor, you know? Because I wanted to get abstinent. What I really wanted was to lose weight. I didn't really want to get abstinent. I wanted to lose weight. And my life was unmanageable. The bottom that I hit with food, once I knew, it's one thing to be out there eating, it's something else altogether to know there's a place and not be willing to accept this gift. So here I am in OA, and I was bulimic at the time, and I was very unsuccessful bulimic because I was a very large bulimic. And everyone else who was bulimic at that time was very slender. And I went to this, I just couldn't get the program. I just couldn't seem to get abstinent. And the first meeting that I ever went to for a 12-step program was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And it was on a Sunday night in New Brunswick at St. Peter's Hospital. And I went in there and I sat in the very, very back, much like this, there's a speaker discussion, sat in the very back, and I never remember anything from that meeting except that God could and would if he were sought. I started to cry. At the beginning of that meeting, they read that in the beginning, I started to cry, and I didn't stop crying the entire meeting. And I slipped out, and so that's what I remembered about a 12-step program. God could and would if he were sought. And I never forgot that. But that's what they said. So I started, you know, and I became friends with people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then they told me essentially about Overeaters Anonymous. That's how I wound up in 6 Mile Run. But I just couldn't. I would do anything. I would do absolutely anything and everything that was suggested to me to get abstinent because I was desperate. And I did all the writings, I did all the readings, I went to a meeting every day, I called 6 people a day, and I always ate every day, without exception. I called my sponsor, Andy, I ate again yesterday, I ate again. She said, today's a new day. You can choose to eat today, or you can choose to not eat today, but today is a new day. Call her up the next day until I ate again, every day, for like years. I called her every day. Thank God I called her. And in the meetings, I used to go to the meetings, and they used to ask, is there anybody new or coming back every day? I'm Bernadette, I'm coming back every single day. I was a perpetual failure with the food. I just didn't want to stop eating. I wanted to lose weight. I wanted to be abstinent because I thought abstinent looked like, you know, they say, look for somebody who has what you want and then ask them how they did that. And so I would go to anybody who was, you know, relatively thin and attractive and maybe had money, and I thought, that's what I want. You know, that's it, right there, the whole package. And I used to think, this would be great if I could just be abstinent every day. I begged God every day, please, please, my God, help me be abstinent, please, every day. And I did everything. And the reason I did everything was because I didn't want anybody to kick me out, because there's no place else to go. I had tried everything to lose weight, to stop this eating, everything. And once I'm learning, now I know I am addicted to sugar, since I learned from everybody, and I tried to give up, I could. And I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop eating. And I'm a sugar addict, like a heroin addict is to heroin. And I would binge. I would go every day to the City Bakery in New Brunswick and order a cake every day with the Happy Birthday Jimmy. This lady must have thought, like, every day. I went, and I didn't have a car. So I walked. I lived in New Brunswick on Eastern Avenue. I walked to the City Bakery, and I went home every day with a fork. There's no point in a knife. Why do you need a knife? It's only me, you know. And I would do this sort of thing every day. And that would be not a binge. That would just be a little something, you know, to tide me over until I got to the binge. Crazy. Crazy, crazy. And I wanted what I thought was freedom. Because to me, at the time, freedom looked like, as I say, thin, attractive, with money, and maybe a boyfriend or a husband or something. And that's what I thought, oh, that's what I want. And I wanted it because it looked really attractive. And so I kept trying to be abstinent. I kept begging God every day. My sponsor would say to me, you know, write a letter to God. And then, you know, I read all the steps. And at the time, we didn't have an OA. 12 and 12. We only had the AA 12 and 12. And I knew, I am addicted to food like these alcoholics were addicted to alcohol. And I am. I am. And so I'm trying now, I'm going to meetings every day. OA meetings every day, and I was getting rides and all that. And I just couldn't get abstinent. Not a day. I just couldn't do it. Every morning I woke up, I said, today's the day. By 10 o'clock, I said, tomorrow's going to be the day. And always I was going to get abstinent starting tomorrow. Tomorrow I was going to start. I was actually going to start exercising, and I was going to start being abstinent tomorrow. And every day that I woke up, every day I wake up, it's today. And I was going to start tomorrow, so that means tomorrow. And I never start. Never start. Because every day I'm going to start tomorrow. I know today, if I say, oh, I think I'll do that tomorrow, then I'm not going to do it. I save my, like, I'm doing the laundry, and laundry is going around, and it's dry, and now it's warm, and it would be a good time to fold it so it's not wrinkled. And you know what happens? I think I'll do that tomorrow, because there's nobody here. It's not going to affect anybody, except it's going to be cold and wrinkled, and I don't want to do it tomorrow. And I don't want to do it now, and if I don't want to do it now, I'm going to feel even less like doing it tomorrow. That's just the way it is. And I've come to know that from my experience. So anyway, going back, I'm talking to my sponsor every day, I've been meeting again, meeting again, and I couldn't stop. And I said, all right. There was it was a behavioral modification hospital. And they were going to teach me how to eat in, you know, like two cookies, say, or just in moderation. Moderation is a good word. Eat in moderation, and then work through all my issues. If I work through all my issues, then I will then know how to eat in moderation, and I'll be able to work through everything that I'm going on, and I won't need to overeat. I won't need to use food. Except that I didn't want to know how to eat two cookies. I was never interested in learning or knowing how to eat one or two. I wanted the entire bag. Always. I didn't want one. I wanted to escape. So I went to this place, and I stayed there, and I was there for, I guess, about a month and a half. And it was a behavioral modifications place, and I do believe it still exists, and they help people with food issues, overeaters, and undereaters, and there's no hope there. There's no hope. Because it's all about me focusing on myself and getting myself together. And if I get myself together and work through my issues, I won't need to use food. But that doesn't work for me because I can't get myself together. If I could get myself together, I would have gotten myself together way long time ago. In the beginning, when I came the first time. I heard what you said in these rooms. I heard all about the 12 steps. And I thought, what a beautiful thing. And in the big book, it talked about the only people who don't get it are people who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And I didn't know what that meant. So I had to look up those words. Constitutionally incapable of being honest. I must be one of those people because I'm not getting it. And then I learned that that means that I'm born with an inability to tell the truth. And here's the thing. Every time I ate, I was in hell every day. Every day. I knew that was the truth. I knew it was the truth. To eat was hell. Hell. It was horrible. I was crying before the first bite. Every day. I was crying as I was eating. And I had friends in the program. There were young people in the program at the time. And they were all abstinent. And I was the perpetual eater. I was the memory greener every day coming back. Because I couldn't stop. Because what I would do anything to be abstinent except not overeat. I would do anything. Tell me what writings to do, tell me what readings, tell me everything what I need to do. I was afraid of you. I was afraid that you were going to tell me to stop coming. It's years now, Bernadette. Hopelessly an eater, and I was. And then, it just got so bad. I got into this place. I left the place. I tried to commit suicide. They took me back in as an emergency. They locked me in. I was in this one room next to the nursing station with a window, an observatory window. So I went to the room, the art room. That's the only thing, art therapy. I tried everything. I got the art therapy room. I put up pieces of paper. I blocked that window so they couldn't see me, This is not helpful. They thought, okay. And so when I think about insanity, I actually am. And I actually can get paperwork on it. They do have it. And they said, it's so wrong. So I left there against medical advice because I knew this is not right. I'm never going to get this. This being, not being obsessed with food. I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't do anything. And I used to think alcoholics had it so easy because they didn't have to drink. And I had to eat. And I felt sorry for myself. And I ate an awful lot because I felt sorry for myself. Alcoholics who were as desperate with alcohol as I was with food would wish that, I know they did because I've spoken with them, and they wanted to be a food person. They said, so I'd be a little overweight. At least I would have my liver. Being an alcoholic at that level of the bottom. I mean, I did things with food that were just, eating other people's food, eating food that I took outside and put in a bag and put in the garbage and black bag in the gutter with everybody else's garbage. I had no money. I had no more food. And I had to eat. I threw out all my food. In my anger and my frustration and my desperation, I threw out all the food, and I had no more money, not even pennies. I used to go pay for food with pennies in the bodega. And every day they would see me come in. And in the end, my bottom with food was just, I didn't take a shower. I didn't brush my teeth. I didn't change my clothes. I certainly didn't go to work. I was unemployable. I couldn't keep a job. I would have 9 W-2s. That year I said, okay, I had 9 jobs. Because I would work at a job for a week, maybe 2 weeks, maybe 4 days, and I would quit. Because I couldn't keep working. I am a dysfunctional. I am not somebody who just wanted to lose a little bit of weight. I was desperate. And every day I became more desperate. Desperate to stop. And I tried to commit suicide a couple times. I couldn't lose weight. I hated myself. And I hated everybody. Because I was afraid. I was afraid of all of you. So my body, here I am learning about this, constitutionally incapable, that's not me. So I kept thinking, well then maybe I will get it. But I thought the only way I'm going to get it is if I have a bodyguard and I'm in shackles. That's the only way I'm going to be able to not eat. Because I can't help myself. I can't not eat. Do you understand? I was driven. You know, I just couldn't stop. So I go outside and I put the bag of garbage in the street. It's August. It's about 95 degrees. And I would throw everything in that bag. And then what am I going to do? I had to get that back. I had to bring that food back in the house. And I had to eat. I was living in a boarding house. 10 people in a boarding house in New Brunswick. And I'm going through that garbage and I said, that's a wet Oreo, and I don't know what's wet with it. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I had to eat. Do you understand? I had to eat. Like an addict, like a heroin addict who is driven. I was driven to eat. I couldn't stop. Couldn't stop. Every day. Couldn't stop. I don't know what, the same way that like a drug addict drops pills down the sink, you know, to get rid of them, and then they're still sort of down there, they're a little bit moist, and don't know what that is, but they take them anyway, because I need that as an addict. Me, that's me with food, and it doesn't really matter what the food is made of. It really doesn't matter what the ingredients are of the food, because as soon as I'm reaching for that food, I have stepped away. I've stepped away. And it's an act of suicide. So, day after day, I'm calling my sponsor. I get myself into a rehab, a 12-step OA rehab in Florida. I go down there. I'm down there for a couple months. I come back up here. 10 days later, I'm eating too much. My metabolic adjustment. This is like in the 80s. It's like your life. I said, well, it was an idea to try to help me to not eat. I tried everything. Everything, everything. So I come out 10 days later, I'm eating. Just couldn't stop. So then the bottom is getting worse and worse, and I said to my sponsor, I think I've never been to Carrier. I'm going to go to Carrier, and I'm going to go in there into an hospital. She said to me, you know, Bernadette, the only problem with going in to a place like that is eventually, I knew it. I have to come out. She said, yes. I knew what the 12 steps were. I read them all the time. I did writings on them. I could probably tell you page and paragraph kind of thing. But I never didn't know what they meant. I didn't know anything about the 12 steps, really. Even though I knew verbatim, I didn't know how that applied to my life. And so, in my desperation, every day, every single day, I begged God. And one day, people have been asking me all the time for years, what did you do different on that day that you got abstinent? What was different? What did you do different? I said I was in the same spot. I was on my knees in the same position. I was praying to the same Almighty God, and I was using the same words, and nothing was different. I don't know what was different. For years I said nothing was different, I don't know. And then one day I thought, you know, I know what was different. I didn't care if I didn't lose an ounce. I was maybe, I don't know, around about 100 pounds heavier. I didn't care if I didn't lose an ounce. I didn't care if I didn't look cute or pretty or nice. I didn't care if I had to wear ShopRite sneakers and black nylon socks and shorts. I used to think that because I heard this person once. I heard him speak. And he talked about how the steps applied in his life. And he happened to be wearing, he was a grown man, he happened to be wearing black nylon socks and sneakers, shopping sneakers, and shorts. And I thought to myself, that's what I want. I don't care what I look like. I don't care if I don't ever make money or if I always owe money. I don't care about anything. All I wanted
It was peace. Peace. I was so desperate. I just wanted peace. And my family trying to get me in and out of the rehab. My family, I can't imagine how difficult this was for them. For my mom. My mom. You know, part of my trying to get the program and all this was that I put them on 90 days abstinence. I can't see you or talk to you or hear from you in 90 days, and of course that lasted for 8. Thank God. Thank God for God. So what happened was that I didn't care if I didn't lose weight. I didn't care what I looked like. All I wanted was peace. And I began to pray in a different way. And I just talked to God, the same God. And I started to work those steps. And that first step of powerlessness, you know, people used to say to me all the time, Bernadette, you need to do just 1%. You have to do 1%. God will do 99%. You have to do 1%. And I was desperate. I have no percent. I didn't have 1%. I didn't have any part of 1% to give God. I had nothing. I've been doing this now for an awful long time. And I was desperate. And I had to give God my nothingness. I had to give Him that I am nothing. And that I'm nobody. I came from a house with obese parents, with, you know, the whole history thing, the abusive house, whatever. My mom, she loved us. She did everything. She loved us. But I couldn't do it for my mom. I couldn't do it because I loved her. I couldn't do it because I wanted you guys to love me. I couldn't stop eating. I only could get abstinent when I surrendered to God. My nothingness. I can't even get a day. Not even a morning. People used to say to me, pick up the phone before you pick up the food. So I did. I had the food, I had the phone, I picked up the phone first, I called somebody, and then I ate. I could never not eat. Like, there was no trick that I wasn't doing to get it. There was no little something that was causing me to go back out and eat and eat. And so I started on this business with the abstinence. I called my sponsor the next day, and I told her. I said, Andy, I was abstinent yesterday. And she said, well, today's a new day. And whether you ate yesterday or you didn't eat yesterday, today's a new day. I thought she was going to have a celebration with me. No, she said, she said, today's a new day. That's what she said. Today, Bernadette, it's a new day. All by itself, yesterday, whether we ate yesterday or we didn't eat yesterday, it doesn't count for today. I don't get to count up all my days and how many days back to back that I did this. Because it doesn't matter. Today is today, and this is it. It's not a dress rehearsal for tomorrow. Today is today, and this is it. And it's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day. I have come to know that the Almighty God is a humble God, and a gentle God, and a kind God. And He just, I think to myself, like, how long, I wonder, He's waiting and He's hoping and He's waiting and she's going to look up any minute. She's going to see me. I'm standing here waiting. And I just didn't look up because you know what? I was looking at my legs, my thigh, my table, my food, whatever I was looking at, it definitely wasn't up. And so, with this beginning of abstinence, and I used to think, by the way, that if you had a year of abstinence, smooth sailing for the rest of your life. If you had a year, you were done. That was it. You're just going to be abstinent forever and that was that. All those people, you know, the eye rollers, oh, there's Bernadette's come back. All the eye rollers, they're gone. They're not here today. They're not here. All those young people who were abstinent for that year, they're not here. They're gone. I don't know where they are. Maybe they moved away. Maybe they started to eat again. I really don't know. I know that today, if I get up today and I surrender my life, my will, over to the care of God, that I will have today a beautiful day. a perfect day, and it will be rich. And what happens? So what I started to do, I used to think, every day I was broken. I cried every day. My friend Liz, I was talking to her today. I called my friend, I said, Liz, you remember when we used to go to those Unity Day things and all the all-day marathon kind of OA things? She said, yeah, those this morning. She said, yes, I do. I said, I'm going to one today. She said, oh, burn at her. I'll be thinking about you. I said, all right. She's still in it. And every now and then we'll call each other and I'll say, Liz, my God, you remember those early days that were so easy? And she'll say, yeah, you cried for 3 years. Every day. I said, right. And then, and we do the same thing. She'll call me and say, it was so easy. Don't eat, go to meetings, and just keep yourself busy. Don't eat and go to meetings. Don't pick up and eat and go to meetings. And I say to her, yeah, right. So easy. You cried every day for 2 years. And we did. And we did. I cried every day. I still cry. Cry quite a bit. But what started to happen is that all this time of prayer, I realized at some point that my life was just too big, and I was afraid. I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of everyone. And I had to find some way to get out of bed, the courage to just get out of bed and do the next thing. So I started to have my quiet time with God. I started the quiet time. And prayer time. And listening time. It's not just about what I tell him. Now I don't say anything. I'm very quiet. And I've come to know that God, I think to myself, he all this time he's waiting. He says, you're going to just sit on my lap here. Working these steps. Third step. Fourth step. I took my inventory. Right? Fifth step. Look at the nature of my wrongs. It's not the history of all my wrongs. It's the nature of what I've done wrong. Second step says that every single meeting is an assurance that we will be restored to sanity if we are rightly related to God. If. That's a huge conditional of the sentence, every meeting is an assurance that we will be restored to sanity. I know I'm being restored to sanity because I don't want to eat the food that takes me to hell, that would kill me if I ate it. I don't want to eat that food. Do you understand? This is a miracle. I am somebody who used to get food from under the dumpster at Dunkin' Donuts because, you know, Dunkin' Donuts was a good place. I thought, anyway, at least it would be sort of good garbage, you know. When you have no money, what choice do I have? And today, I drive by Dunkin' Donuts and I think they have very good coffee in there. Thank God, you see, freedom to me today is an entirely new business of living. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And this comes from a life, really, just anchored in with God. And that's exactly what it is. This program is not about abstinence. Abstinence is not the goal to the program. And I know today is the Abstinence Day International, which is wonderful. Abstinence is a means to the goal. The goal in the 12th step does not say that I have lost 37 pounds or 137 pounds as a result of working these steps. It doesn't say that I've gotten abstinent as a result of working these steps. It doesn't say that at all. Actually, it says having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps. So what we're really looking for, and what they wrote those steps for, and what they did, they were alcoholics. They, by the way, we do have to drink. Alcoholics have to drink every single day. They choose what they drink. We have to eat every day. We make a choice about what we eat. Alcoholics don't have it easier. Every time, if they're an alcoholic like I am, an eater, every time they take a sip of water, they know what they're not sipping. They know exactly what they're not drinking. Until there comes that sense, the surrender and freedom, that sense of being really and truly cared for and anchored in. And this starts to happen as we work these steps. That first step is, it's the only step that we work perfectly. And we do work it perfectly. It doesn't mean that, in my experience, working step one perfectly doesn't mean that I perfectly have the food in a perfect fashion. Even if I think my food is in a perfect fashion, the right food plan, the right, you know, if I had the right scale and the right cup and the right food plan and all that, then I would be abstinent. That's not it, because the perfection that we're talking about in step one, with absolute 100% perfection, is that I have no power over food. That's what step one is. I'm powerless over food. I'm powerless. If I had power over it, I would have used my power and I never would have had to stay in upbringing moms. But I don't have that power. That step, we work perfectly because we're powerless. That's what we give back to God. We have no power. We have none. We don't have 1%. We don't have any part of 1% unless you do. And if you do, then that's great. And some people might. And then you can give whatever you can to God. That's wonderful. I don't have it. Me, Bernadette, I don't have any power. But God has all power. He either has all power and I have none, or he has most and I have some. I don't have any. And I give him my nothingness. And that ultimately is what pays. In riches that are beyond, it's the living rivers. You see, he promised, and I say, you know, he asked me, give me your heart, Bernadette. I said, I give you my heart. He's a beautiful God. I love God. He's beautiful. I do. I think he's really very, very beautiful. Even when he looks sort of homely and short and kind of thin and bent over, and I say, you know, you're kind of homely, you know. It looked like a tree, a magnificent tree. It looked like anything. You're God, and you want to be sort of homely and smallish. Nods, you know. I say, but I think you're really nice or something. Can I come closer to you? And he smiles. Yeah, come closer. And this is a business about meditation and prayer in the 11th step. The meditation is actually what it is. It's an imagination. That's what our imaginations are for, to start using them and start. And really and truly, the only focus for me every day, my only focus today is to find God, to hear God, to see him in everyone, to hear him in every sound and in the silence, and to find him in everything, everywhere. I said it to my friend, you know, my friend, he's a priest. It's funny, I'm in that confessional bed, on my knees, and I was praying, I told him, I'm Catholic, and he said to me, in this confessional, you know, the fifth step, so I told him everything, and he said, all right, now I'm going to ask you to say a prayer. Do you know this prayer? Do you know the memorare? He asked me if I know this prayer. I'm on my knees in this little box, confessional, in church with the priest. I didn't know the memorare. And I panicked for a second, and then I said, yes, absolutely, I do. And I looked at the ceiling, and I thought, Bernadette, there's no hope for you. You are right here. You're already dead. You're going straight down. You're going to leave before you even leave the box. But I get a chuckle. It took me only about 12 years to go back and say, you know what, I lied in here once. And it's funny. And it's a good thing every now and then to catch a little bit of humor in who we are and to know who we are. But as we work these steps, there's 12 of them. There's all 12 of them. That fifth step, the nature of the wrong. Not the list of the wrongs, the nature. The nature is that I was rude to my sister is the wrong. The nature is that I was jealous because she was so pretty. And she was everybody's friend and everybody liked her. And that's the nature of the wrong, is that I was jealous of her. And what the wrong was, that I was rude. I was so rude because I wanted her to, you know, be feeling small or something. Because I wanted to feel bigger. And today, the freedom I have today, I don't have to be bigger. I don't have to be anything. In fact, I can sit right on God's lap, and I do this all the time. I take my broken heart, my world-weary, war-torn heart, and I lean against the heartbeat of God. I sit on his lap, and I lean against his heartbeat, and I put my head in the crook of his neck, and he puts his chin on my head, and then he starts to purr. And if you were listening, you'd say, oh, God is purring. Huh? It's nice. He's not hurting, he's saying to me, my precious little Bernadette, in whom I am well pleased. I love you. You. I love you. And he's purring, and everybody thinks, oh, everybody smiles, this is God's purring. He's very happy. He's happy because we go to him, not for what we're going to get. I don't go to God anymore for what he's going to give me and what I'm going to get from him, even though it's going to be good. Believe me, it's going to be good. It's going to be great. And I need to surrender to him. But when I go to God just because he's God, imagine, then he would say, oh, and I say, you want to play, like, sometimes he's like a lion, you know. God can be in any way. That's why our understanding of God, nobody can ever, we can't put a God in a box. We can never say, my higher power is this way, and that's it, and that's the way actually that everybody should be. No, this is not so. This is not so, because we can't put God in the box. God is going to break out of the box if we try. He's never going to. It's just, it's a power. He has the power. And his power is love. His power and his way, it's like he melts. Everything that's icy and mean, he melts it away. And so as I'm working these steps, in that fifth step, I start the nature of the wrong. And then in step six, I think, okay, then I'm ready. The whole thing. Step seven, I'm actually demanding, God, we were just talking about this yesterday in a meeting. Go ahead and remove every one of my defects of character. If you would, I would love it. I would love it. Do you need me to stop?
No.
Oh, that was up here. Sorry. Yeah. Saw the hand wave and I thought, uh-oh. Because I'm supposed to go to... All right. So, at any rate, getting back to that seventh step, but we were talking yesterday about the seventh step, and it said in the book that we humbly ask God to remove our defects of character so that we may be of use to God and to other people. We don't humbly ask God to remove our defects. I don't humbly ask God to remove my defects so that I feel good about myself and now I'm not active in my defects anymore. I humbly ask him to remove them so I might be of use to him and to somebody else, one of his children. And so, and the freedom comes, do you see, as the freedom with that first step of powerlessness, what starts to happen is that it's not about food at all. Our recovery is not about food. In fact, the only step that talks about food is the first one, and what it says is that we don't have any power over food. So don't try to fight the food, Bernadette, because you're never going to win. So just surrender to God, and God will direct your ways. And he will. He can, and he will. He does. God could and would if he was so. He can, and he will, and he does. And so in that seventh step, when I'm humbly asking him, I have to go back and say, well, step six, I'm all ready. I'm entirely ready. How do I become entirely ready, really and truly entirely ready for God to remove my defects of character? Once I see them, and I know them, and I eat them, I taste them, I wear them, I can't stand it, and I'm ready. I don't become willing to have God remove them until I have tried. I try to remove my defects of character. It's a natural thing for me to try to remove them. I see them, it's not a good thing. I don't want to be lazy, so I'm going to file those papers tomorrow. We know what happens to tomorrow. They're never going to get filed. If I don't start today. So then I would think to myself, well, you know what? I'm going to file those papers today and I'm going to do it later. It doesn't work like that. I have to surrender my laziness to God and ask him then, in his own good time and for his own good purpose, to remove my defects of character. And I know what my defects of character are. Once I see them, and then I share them with somebody else, in five. And then I try to remove them, in six. By seven, I am so tired. And somebody once said to me, you know, if you needed to move your car because you were going to get a ticket, and you have to move it by 10 p.m., and you go to somebody at 12 noon and say, would you move my car for me because I can't move it and I don't want to get the ticket. And then you sit there watching them and it's getting later and later and you want to, there's no humility involved in that. You're pretty much demanding me, you know, come on, get up, never mind, I'll take my own keys and go move my own car. And I can't do it. So then I'm trying to move my own car. It's the humility part. I believe that God is a humble God. He's a kind and gentle and humble God. And so, way back, I'm powerless over food, so I am not trying to control anything about food. And what I start to learn is that I'm powerless, actually, over everything. If I have no power, then I'm actually powerless. I have no power. Not over people, not over food, not over my weight, not over the way I look. I don't really care for my nose, this sort of thing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we look like. It really doesn't. And it gets back to the people. Who are the people? We are the people, and God is the God, and He loves us. And that's His, I think, like through all the steps, He sort of weaves His little way through. Every step, we come closer and closer to knowing what is it to really live in constant, unbroken communion with God. Every minute of every hour of every day, in constant, unbroken communion with God. I believe that God, as we all know, gave us free will. We all know about that gift. I don't know that we all know about the hungry ticker. I think He made every heart with a hungry ticker. And it's hungry, hungry, tick, 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 tick. It's a hungry ticker. And we try to fill it with food. So we actually are the ones that we use food initially, of course. And then food doesn't really satisfy. And then maybe we get abstinent anyway, or we're just not overeating anyway. And we're hungry, you know. That hunger doesn't go away just because we know that it's there. God put that little hungry ticker. I think He put the hungry ticker because we're hungry for communion with Him. And I think His whole hope in giving us life is that we're eventually going to find Him again. We're going to look for Him. We're going to want Him at some point. He gave us that hungry ticker. We think it's the relationship. No, we're married. Not the relationship. That doesn't satisfy. It's the education. No, it's the new car. No, it's the new house. Oh, it's my job. It's something. Always something out there. One more of something. I know I've heard so many people over the years. We don't call it hunger. We just said I was in the mood for something more. You know, we always want more. How much? And God, my God, as I know Him, He is enough. He satisfies utterly, fully, to the fullest full. He perfectly satisfies. He makes it. And the hungry ticker, when it rests back in God, is satisfied. Stops being hungry. The hungry heart. Our hearts are going to continue to try to fill that hunger with something. And these 12 steps are really the bridge back to life. They're the steps that bring us back into living life. And so we're in step 8 and we start to make a list. And you know, we have the people who we owe amends to. They're in our fourth step. They're in our fourth step. The people that we owe amends to, we have a list of them, and if we look at that fourth step, we will find them. The eighth step is a process for life. We're never going to be done learning how to live in communion with other people, in partnership, in a relationship with other people. We're never going to be done with this. So step 8 and step 9 is a lifetime process. It's my experience. So in step 8, I think the beauty, step 8, so Christina shared before, the most beautiful thing. I don't have to duck into aisle 4 because I see somebody coming in the store that I really don't need. I don't have to hide from anybody. I can go anywhere. Anywhere. And look anybody and everybody directly in the eye and not be afraid. Steps 8 and 9 are freedom steps. I have to look at what have I done. I have that back at step 4, all those people I resented. Probably a limit. When I wish somebody would move, like, to China or something, I probably owe them an amends. It's just the way that it works, you know. Like, oh, when I go to Roma, oh boy, there's so-and-so. I think that, oh, I owe them an amends. No doubt. I have to look at something. So, today, thank God, there's nobody really that I'm wishing would move to another, maybe another county, but not necessarily. life is hard sometimes. But steps 8 and 9 are the freedom steps. because we start to get then that we can run into anybody, anywhere. I could be in the gas station, somebody could pull in behind me, and it's all right if I know them or don't know them. But I'm not afraid. And when I was in the food, I was afraid of everybody. I was afraid to be in life. I was afraid. So now I'm in this position. I say, all right, God, I'll sit on your lap, and we'll go through the day. We'll spend our day together. I'll lean into your heartbeat, and that's what happens. When I am overwhelmed, and of course now you see I'm in a wheelchair. Whoever in their wildest thoughts would have thought I would be in a wheelchair. I was trained to run New York, you know, marathon. And I was having trouble, having more trouble. And I have multiple sclerosis, and I end up in the chair. And the most amazing thing of all is that when the doctor initially told me that I had that, he said, you know, 99% of this is going to be your attitude. I said, then it's going to be a good ride. Then we're going to be in good shape. We're going to be in good shape. If it's an attitude thing, no problem. Because I've been in hell, and this chair is not it. I brought in bags from the garbage, from the street. This chair is not it. And so, I said, all right, step 10. Step 10 is where I start to learn on a regular basis all the time. If I harm somebody, I can make an amends. It's again the freedom. You see? I'm free today. I'm free. And so, step 11 is just about one of my favorite steps of all, because we're allowed then to use our imagination to come to a better understanding and to know God and who God is and how He is. And I think, like, all right, I sit on His lap. I love the God chair. I love that God chair. I also have had a God. Now I'm in my chair. I always have a chair. So, you know, one blessing about being in the chair is that you never have to worry about being late. You always have a seat. It's actually a good thing. It's a good thing. But I thought to myself, you know what? If He has me seated in this position, it's a constant reminder always, never ever get out of the lap of God. Never. I can live my entire life sitting on the lap of God. And when I am so broken, and believe me, I have been broken and broken, I take to Him. I didn't cry for 3 years every day because I was all together. I really, really did not have an easy time. And my heart has been broken into 100 million pieces. And I go to God and I tell Him my heart is broken. And I can't even speak. Usually I just cry and I just point. And I lean my tired heart against the heartbeat of God. And it's the steady, rhythmic, pounding heart of God. And He has all power. He is the mighty God. And I know this because I am not looking to eat yodels every day. He is the mighty God. I could not leave food alone. And if I left it alone, believe me, I knew every minute what I was not eating that was right there for me to eat. I was consumed with food. My addiction to food, any food, it didn't matter what it was. I would binge on oranges, Brussels sprouts. It doesn't matter what the food is. I would binge on things I didn't like. I was starving. One time, I ate 18, you know, those great big, those big donuts. I ate so much food. It was on a binge walk back from Highland Park to the concert. And I was stuffed. And I was so thirsty. Because I was stuffed. I binged a dozen donuts, five of those. I ate 17 pounds of white chocolate. Boom. People say, how do you do that? Well, you do it. It's not hard. 3 5-pounders, you get two, you know, ears, tail, bite, stick on. Easy. It's not hard. It's not hard. For me, it was not hard. And that was not the binge. That was the walk home from getting my stuff. I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop with the food. And then when I had the food, when I had a little bit of an afterlife and I had my plan and everything, I told you that I would be eating too much of my treat, my snack, or too much of my lunch, or too much whatever it was, because I was always hungry. always. So to be here, resting on God's lap, and fully, fully satisfied. I am not hungry today. I'm not afraid of being hungry. I've been hungry. I used to think, you know, I eat breakfast at this time, lunch at noon, dinner at 5, and I was in traffic, and I was so upset. There was an accident. I was upset about the accident. I was thinking about my dinner. Oh, I wasn't able to eat my dinner. By the time I got home, it was so late. I mean, it was so late. I thought, this could practically be breakfast. Maybe you should have breakfast with this dinner. And that's just the way that I think about food. Like, food was anything and everything in any way. We will not die if we are hungry for some reason. If we can't get a meal, we won't die. It's in my experience now that I won't die if I get hungry. It's okay to be hungry. Sometimes it happens. And I don't die. I don't. And I actually was in the Sam's Club, and they had the floor just healing food, you know. Naturally, they have other things in Sam's Club, but I only noticed the food aisles. And they have floor to ceiling, and it's a warehouse of food. And you know what? They didn't have this available when I was eating. There was no Sam's Club. God help us. There was a Sam's Club. I just never leave. I keep walking aisle out. And at any rate, to be able to go into a Sam's Club with floor to ceiling food and I practice, I think, okay, I was hungry. I said, Lord, is my shepherd, I shall not want. And then I said, Lord, it's my shepherd, and I shall not want. And I shall not want anything, ever. And I wasn't hungry anymore, and I didn't want. I didn't even care about the food. I was actually pretty happy, kind of skipping along with the carriage there. Life is a good thing, rich and beautiful. I can't know that unless I am anchored, rightly related to God as I understand Him. And my understanding of God continues to grow every now and then. I tell you, I've had this, I thought, like, what if we die and we go to heaven and God is a roly-poly God? He's going to look at me and he says, sorry, you sweat the butter, I tell him. What do we know? You know, what if God is a sort of a homely-looking, smallish kind of, and then he smiles at me and I say, you have one tooth. What if he wants me to learn to just love? What if we find God in really the most vile people that are just, and even the annoying people who are very nice usually, and what if we find God everywhere, in everything, and in everyone, everywhere? I think to myself every now and then, everything is holy, constant, unbroken communion with God, with God. I'm not hungry. That is a miracle. That I'm not eating is not the miracle. That I don't want to go after more food. That's the miracle. That's the miracle. And it is, I think it's like worthy of print. You don't need to go in the news, tell people, oh yes, I'm not hungry. Do you know what kind of freedom that is? If you were driven by food like I am. I am not hungry. This is life. This is huge. So here I am in the 11th step and I'm thinking, it says the Lord, it gives us a prayer in there. Gives us a prayer. And it says, make me a channel of your peace. I pray this prayer. You say, make me a channel of your peace. So that what that means then is for me to be empty so that his living rivers can flow right through. For me to be empty and for God to allow him access. He says to me, I said to him, well, you know, I'm in this chair, and I said, you know, what if I can't get out? What am I going to do if I can't go out? Can't meet anybody, can't see anybody, can't talk to anybody. What if I don't get a phone call? What if I just sit here? How am I going to be of service? He said, you stay rooted in me and open your hands. You sit on my lap and open your hands. And my love will run through you and it will spill into your home. And my love, my peace, my goodness, my grace, God does the work. We don't do the work. I don't do the work. God does the work. And he says, open your hands, Bernadette. Open your hands. And I will use your liver. This really is, to me, the greatest, because I'm not hungry. It's the greatest to be free, to not be, and to not care what I look like. I don't know what I look like that. My hair is a little good, probably not. I don't care what I look like because the message is not about me. It's not about me at all. The message is that there is freedom for us. Somebody has on a t-shirt that says the joy of living. And the beginning of the 12th step says that the joy of living is the theme of the 12th step. The joy of living. I carry a little bag. Oh, here it is right here. See my little pocketbook? It has my little card on it. And it says, scatter joy. And I think to myself, people call me and they say, oh, Bernadette, I ate again. I said, you brush your teeth, did I? I'm on my way to work. Yes, of course I did. Then you're in the game. When you go to the store. When you go to the store, any store, park as far away from the door as you can. Well, I hate myself and I ate again and I just feel miserable. I say, park as far away, not for the exercise. Leave a blessing. Just a kind thought. Just a kind thought. You see a car that's not really a nice looking car, that's troublesome. That family must have trouble. Let me leave a little extra one there. Every space, I leave a kind thought. Somebody's going to come out of that store and they're going to trip on that and they're going to be blessed. And they're not going to know it. But I'll know it. By the time I get to that store, my self-esteem, I feel so good. I think, oh, I could skip. I could skip to the front door of the store. Because I have forgotten about Bernadette for 5 minutes. Freedom. I love freedom. For me, the real freedom is not love myself. Learn to love myself, do kind things to myself, always be good to myself. If I am loving myself, then I am going to get, it's a trap. I know that. Love myself or hate myself, it's about myself. There's no place, there's no room for God there. Love myself, let me work, and people tell me, I'm working on learning to love myself. I say, then do something for somebody else. The best gift of freedom. I haven't been hating myself. I haven't been loving myself. I haven't even been thinking about myself. Oh, freedom. It's freedom, do you see? To be somebody who was locked up in a room with a window for observation and to not be able to stop with food. Freedom. I could go anywhere. You could put any food. I actually don't even want it. And it's okay. It's all right to have food around. I got abstinent in a home with somebody who has regular food. My house wasn't like sober safe, an abstinent with no food. It had every food. And the food was out. For me, the freedom is not that I don't eat, it's that I don't want to eat. I don't want that anymore. Because I have now I have enough. I have everything enough in my heart is full. So in that theme, the joy of living, it's a great joy to be in life today. It's a tremendous joy. You know, I was working and I was on my lunch hour and I was taking a walk. I used to do this mile walk and I saw this bus came with these kids. They were grown people, but they were special needs kids. They were grown. And this girl, it was cold, and she had on a jacket. It was zippered all the way up under her chin, and she was, I don't know, maybe Down syndrome or something. She had a plastic bag, like a ShopRite bag. And, you know, I stood there and watched her. She was so happy. She was catching wind in her bag. This happened, like, 17 years ago. I think all the time of that that woman, I think, oh, she was catching wind in her bag. And she was so happy. I think, oh, she's beautiful. I love this. The freedom to just be. And like with God, I think, okay, God, and every now and then, you know, he could be anything of our understanding. Sometimes he's a lion. And when I'm really just quiet and I'm so upset, and he comes and he's a big lion and he just blinks his eyes at me and I think you're... And he shakes his head and his hair is all fluffy, big mane, and I look at him and I sort of get distracted from all my crying stuff. I look at that beautiful mane and I say, you want to play hairdo? To know of a God who is so personal and pure and almighty, who will give us everything we need and hopes every day that we might want to look for him. This is what we get. I believe this is what I have today. It's a freedom that it doesn't matter what happens to me, it doesn't matter what I look like. What I know is that God can, and he does, when he is sought. Seek him. Thank you for listening.
Thank you to Bernadette for that wonderful and inspirational share. We are now scheduled for lunch, which will be from 12 to 1:30. See that? See how we worked it? And from 1 to 1:30, there will be open sharing if you choose to be here for it. Lots and lots of us are going to be